Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 184 of the Square Ball Podcast with Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees when you go through the Square Ball and 20% off for key workers during the lockdown. Even though that's getting relaxed now, you can still take advantage of that offer. LeviSolicitors.co.uk/the Square Ball. I'm Dan Moylan. With me remotely is Michael Normanson.
Hello.
As is Mosca White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Couple of weeks out and Father's Day is coming up in the UK. We've got plenty of cool merchandise on sale. So if you don't want to get Dad something that's got a gambling firm splashed across your chest, you could maybe get something that has a Spanish swear word instead, because we've got all the Leeds Carajo stuff in our merch store, along with a new bunch of stuff. There's the Bielsa mugs that sold out within a week, but don't fear, we're getting more of those. They're going to be back in stock in the next week or so, around Monday the 8th. So you can get Dad one of those. Or if you are a dad and you want to give those unimaginative little bastards a nudge in the right direction, head to thesquareball.net, pick up a Leeds Street Fighter mug, because we've got a bunch of different characters on the second batch there, including Matthias Klick. And we made these because he asked us to, and he's cool, so buy one. And there are coasters on there too, thesquareball.net. Finally, we've got a date. Boys, put it in the diary. It's all very exciting. We can go choosing dresses and things. Saturday the 20th of June is when football returns as it stands.
Never thought it'd happen, to be honest. There have been points in this where I thought this was never going to return this season. I'd pretty much ruled it out. So having a date on it makes it slightly terrifying again, doesn't it?
Provisional date. Still lots to go through, lots to organise. They haven't even decided where Leeds are playing yet. So it does feel like there is still some, those minor details, things like when the Championship playoff final will be, which it sounds like they're basically waiting for Sky to tell them when they can fit it into their busy schedules. But yeah, closer than it was, assuming like half of QPR's squad didn't all hit the beaches this weekend and come back full of the COVID, we might be in with a chance.
Well, let's pick apart then the details from the EFL announcement that's been made in the last couple of days. One of those things that you touched on there, Moscow, about where Leeds are playing, it's dependent on clubs receiving clearance from their local authorities in order to stage matches at their home grounds. And there was talk, one of the clubs that was mooted about having games moved was, of course, Leeds United, because, well, we're Leeds United, aren't we? So how would we feel about games being played on neutral grounds?
Seems unfair. It's fine if everyone's doing it. Don't get me wrong. When that was the proposed method in the Premier League and everyone was going to be playing neutral grounds, that was fine. But yeah, I don't know. It does seem a little bit unfair. And it seems like they are just doing it because they can't be asked dealing with this more complicated problem.
It is bollocks. Yes, people shouldn't go and congregate outside football matches during a national health crisis like the coronavirus, but equally stop them going to beaches. Move the beaches. If Leeds United games have to move somewhere else, move all the beaches somewhere so that people can't get to them.
Move them inland.
Yeah, exactly. Make them
Tamworth.
Make them less appealing so that nobody will want to go. It removes as well. I've never understood the logic. Yes, maybe after Leeds win promotion to the Premier League, there will be a temptation for people to go into the city centre or whatever and gather and celebrate. But that'll happen wherever the game gets played. You could play in Helsinki and people will still go running up and down Park Row after it's finished. But during the game, I can think of nowhere worse to be than Lowfields Road, where you can't see what's happening inside the ground. There's only going to be a handful of people will turn up anyway, and you know you're going to get a load of hassle. It's not in anybody's interest. If you want to experience Leeds United game promotion and it's going to happen behind closed doors, the best way to do it is like if it was an away game and you couldn't get a ticket. you watch it on the TV and then you celebrate afterwards. And I don't see enough Leeds fans choosing to go and stare at some concrete and some cream cladding outside a football ground for it to be so much of a problem that we have to move it halfway across the country and go and, I don't know, is there a football stadium at Barnard Castle that we can go and use or something? Leave us alone. Go and worry about proper things and whether football fans can behave.
I do think that that has a tremendous ability to come back and bite you on the arse, Moscow, but fingers crossed. But I do lean towards that opinion that, come on, give us a little bit of credit. I know we're football fans and we've always been demonised traditionally, but piss off, eh? How about that? How about you piss off?
If it happens, come down on them. You know, exactly the same enforcement that we saw on the beaches and in the parks and every area of outstanding natural beauty, where I'm sure absolutely every single person got shook down by the police and fined for going there when they were told not to. Do the same, but after it happens. I don't see any reason to be moving football matches to different parts of the country. And, I mean, they're doing this with Liverpool and doing this with Leeds is the talk. It's not like those two clubs do not have big fan bases outside their home cities. Oh, we'll move the Leeds games to London because there'll be very, very few Leeds fans there. No, you'll just have the London Whites turning up outside. Or more accurately, you'll have them staying at home and watching it on TV so they actually get to see what happens without a load of hassle.
Knowing the EFL, you've just given me an idea there that yes, they'll move the Leeds Fulham fixture to, oh, where should we play it? Should we say London Craven Cottage? Would that work? I mean, God knows. Anyway, we could use the Dominic Cummins defence anyway, that our instinct told us we had to go down to Lowfields Road and sing and dance and drink alcohol and get naked or whatever form it takes.
Just won me £200 as Dominic Cummins today by not being sacked. Did you see I put that bet on?
No.
£100 on him not to be sacked at the start of all this. I was like, they won't sack him. They are a set of absolute shameless bastards. There's no way he's getting sacked. So there you go. That's my my £200 return from 100. My only bets on Paddy Power were Dominic Cummins not to be sacked, Leeds to not be promoted.
I'm glad you didn't put them on as a double at least.
God, that'd have been tremendous odds actually. I'd have gotten about 20 to 1 on that or something.
The other detail from the EFL statement, second one to pick out, is that the playoff final date will be on or around the 30th of July. And once they've consulted with their masters at Sky Sports, as you said there, Moscow. So that's a Thursday, which ties us into the exact time frame that we thought in terms of playing Saturday, midweek, and so on and so forth, kicking off in about another 3 weeks' time. How do we feel about a playoff final on a Thursday? I mean, at least the disappointment won't be so massive, will it?
There's no hotels to book. Normally you have all that faff around with playoffs, don't you? There's no scramble for tickets that you don't normally get. So it's going to be strange just having to switch on your telly to watch Leeds get beaten in a playoff final.
We're assuming we're getting as far as the final. Is that not tempting fate?
I think we'll go one better than last year, yeah.
That'll be it. We'll actually get to the final this time and not be allowed to go. That's how it works, isn't it?
We might, in fact, just to spite me, we might actually win a final if I'm not there.
I'm sure there's some sort of twisty logic you could take out of whatever the outcome is, because it does feel like the universe is in a way cocking a bit of a snoot to us that we could go up and we can't enjoy it. But, you know, like we've said, greater good and all that. The third and final point that I picked out of this EFL statement was the use of five substitutes. They're looking at that now. Do you think that puts us at a slight disadvantage given how extremely fit our side is and how we overrun teams?
I think as in the Premier League, it gives an advantage to clubs with bigger squads, doesn't it? So given Bielsa's, it seems relatively happy with to use all of our players, including the youngsters, and throw them in when necessary. I don't think it's a disadvantage to us at all. I think we can throw people on. And if you can throw on a newly fit Jean-Kevin Augustin and Jamie Shackleton, who's been doing his lockdown 5Ks in about 6 minutes, you can put both of them on in with 5 minutes to go. Surely that's a good thing.
Is that on a bike or on his feet?
It was on his feet. It wasn't actually that time, but it was ludicrously fast. I remember seeing a screenshot of his Strava run or whatever, and it was obscenely quick.
When has Marcelo Bielsa ever just chucked somebody on with 5 minutes to go, apart from Izzy Brown's fantastic contribution at the end of the playoff semi-final? It doesn't really fit with his style. There is evidence from the Bundesliga restart that there's a lot of players getting a lot of kind of minor muscle injuries that they weren't expecting, and also evidence that home advantage just completely doesn't matter. All those teams at the bottom of the Premier League who were whittering on about not being able to use their home stadiums, apparently it's not making the blindest bit of difference anyway. But the The injuries thing is interesting. Apparently Karen Brady has been in and got some answers about minimum squad size. And apparently if you've got 15 fit players in your squad in the Premier League, the game will go ahead. I don't know if that means that the inverse is true, that if you've only got 14, the game can be called off. But it's interesting that if you only had 15 fit players, you wouldn't even have enough players to make 5 substitutions. So they are being quite harsh on, you know, just because you can't fill a bench doesn't mean that the game's not going to get played.
Interesting that Karen Brady is the one asking about what it would take to cancel games, though, given this has been her desire right from the off of this. Like the first case in Wuhan was flagged up, and I think she was pretty much out there going, I think we should cancel relegation, don't you, everyone? Yeah, it's coming over. It's going to be over here in the next couple of months, and we're better off just cancelling relegation now, I think.
But Bielsa is just Bielsa. I think he won't veer from the tactics that he's been using for years and years. It'll take actual physical leg-breaking injuries for any of his starting 11 to allow themselves to be dragged off the pitch.
Serious question, though. Do you think the reason why the football authorities have centralised the testing rather than leaving it to the individual clubs is so that individual clubs are entirely honest about what's happening within their own training grounds? Do you think they don't trust them?
I wouldn't have trusted them.
They are allowing them to take their own tests in some instances and then send them to a centralised testing facility. I mean, it could be the distrust thing, and I think there's also the scientific reason that different laboratories return different tests, so you do need a level of standardisation across it, even if you're not taking into account nefarious practices. But I wouldn't trust Karen Brady or anybody at West Ham, apart from Robert Snodgrass, with a test tube.
And we've seen 10 positive tests in the latest round of testing with Preston, Middlesbrough, Fulham and Cardiff all affected. Strange to see an increase on week 2 after the testing has started, isn't it? After week 1 was, what was it, 2 tests or whatever, 2 returned positive.
This was a little reminder that things can still go wrong here, wasn't it? The fact that I think the first week was 6, then it was 2, and you thought, oh, well, it's done. No one's got it anymore. It's disappeared from football clubs. And then this little bounce, you think, at what point does 10 become 50? And then is that a problem? Is there a level they get to where they think, actually, this isn't actually viable? And it's not all from one club either, is it, this time? They seem to be spread about the place, which suggests that the virus itself could be spread about the place a bit as well when it comes to next week. So we'll see. It suggests that there's a little way to go before they can start the full group training again, if there's still clubs, several clubs with this in the ranks.
But they're starting, they're cracking on anyway. And that's the problem with everything at the moment. I think there's quite a lot of delusion, not just in football, but football is at the sharp end of things, where we're on Saturday when the government announcement that basically said sport behind closed doors can continue also announced that there were 2,000 new infections on Saturday and 200 deaths added to the overall total, which are figures that are a lot better than they were a few weeks ago, but are also not as good as places like Germany when they started getting teams into training and on the path to the successful Bundesliga restart that we've seen there. And there does seem to have been that acceleration over the last couple of weeks of everybody's a bit bored and this is getting quite difficult to manage. So, fuck it, carry on. Do you want to play football? Yeah. Do you want to go out, go to school, crack on? Yeah, it's still pretty bad, but be all right.
Nando's, well, Premier League football.
Exactly.
Ultra racing, so any good?
I think it's a combination of, the ultra cynical view is that it's putting out good news and treats that things can start happening again, which was always the case with football. It's veered from one, evil footballers won't give all their wages to the NHS, to two, hey, don't you want Premier League football back? How dare they not play? To the less cynical, but still pretty bad view, where it's just like, fuck it, we'll be fine. We'll just carry on. It's all right. Could be better, but let's just go on and see what happens, which it all feels quite risky to me in general. I'm not really talking, there's a risk people have rolled their eyes and think this is a political point. It's not really, it's more just it's a nervousness where I'm not entirely confident about going outside with quite the freedom and abandon that I'm being told I should feel in general. And then also that idea that football can be played without any repercussions, that, for example, positive tests won't suddenly start increasing because the situation wasn't ready for contact training to start again. All the games can be played, but if things start to get worse in the wider society because lockdown is eased too soon, then games have to stop again. And then that raises the spectre from a Leeds United point of view that the teams at the bottom of the Premier League aren't letting go of that idea that if games do get stopped before they're finished, that they won't accept points per game relegation. So my giddiness about, yeah, I'm glad Leeds United are going to be playing again, but I still haven't really shifted from the early weeks when we were talking about it on this podcast, where I think, you know, the whole reason we're doing this is just so that the Premier League gets its money from Sky. That's it. There isn't a better argument for playing football at the moment, and that's why we had to set these dates for the end of July and all this stuff. And I don't think that's a good enough reason to kind of ignore other considerations, or at least to give them less weight than I think they're due. In other words, we're fucked.
I think there's certainly a feeling that the Premier League has basically gone, oh, well, everyone else is getting restarted. We have to restart regardless. It doesn't actually matter whether or not we're meeting the correct criteria for the overall level of infection and stuff that other people have. We just really need to get this going again to cement our position as the best league in the world or whatever it claims to be. And to get hold of that lovely TV money. It just needs to get going now. Otherwise, we're going to be knackered.
It's not even about getting the money from broadcasters. It's about not giving it back. Even if they do play all the games that are left to the end of the season, they still have to give back something like 170 million, which is better than from their point of view, than the 300 million pounds that they were being ordered to hand back to the broadcasters if they didn't play any more games. But it is still the driving force is, if we want to keep that money, we have to play. And I'm not convinced that's a good enough reason for playing if other factors come into account.
That said, I am looking forward to it coming back.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, I tuned into the German games and I look forward to seeing Burnley versus Watford. Is obviously, I can't wait to put that down on my calendar. And then to have seen the Leeds players in training this week was a joy and like a little hint of the normality that I think we would all crave the world from 3 months ago that I think we all miss and wish was still with us, along with the hundreds of thousands of people who've died were still with us. It's nice to have seen those reminders, and it will be nice for that to happen. You just hope it doesn't end up coming back as something worse. And if it does, it will be because the reasons driving it have been financial rather than sensible.
If we look at the points per game model, then we should see in the next 7 days or thereabouts that it should be codified into the Football League rules. They should finally make a decision after meetings about meetings about meetings. June the 8th is the date that they seem to be having what you would assume to be their final decision on this, because if the football is to restart 12 days after that, then they have to kind of get the house in order pretty sharpish, and it seems like that's going to be the date for the final vote. Interesting to see that Phil Hay ran a poll on his Twitter account about whether Leeds fans would prefer to play the last 9 games or take points per game as a means to promotion. 18,500 votes, and it was overwhelmingly, basically 70-30 in favour of playing the last 9 games, which goes to show that at least we want to do it properly, even though the option of doing it easier is on the table and might yet still come to pass.
We're idiots, but we're right. It's the right decision. We should try and play them.
I think there's an element of entertainment creeps into it as well. Nobody got into football because they wanted to just see a league table printed. The telly printed, as exciting and as nostalgic as it was, and the classified results, if there was not an actual game behind that noise on grandstand on a Saturday afternoon where you know that hearing that represents the things that some people have done on a field somewhere else, if you knew it was just purely coming off of a calculation, it's not the game, is it? So even if the risk strategy of bombing out of the automatic promotions and then losing at whatever stage of the playoffs is our destiny is increased by actually playing, it's the whole point of football as a game, isn't it? Of course we want it to come back, and of course we want to watch Leeds United play football matches to win promotion.
It's the sort of hollow victory when I was at school Scum fans used to get when they won another league title. So none of them had ever won too many games. They just were Scum fans because they were winning games and they had a shirt. Didn't even watch them on TV all the time. I was used to make the point that I'd been to more Scum games than they had just from watching Leeds play them. But they were like, yeah, fair enough. You can celebrate if you want, but you're basically celebrating nothing. Just know that.
And the point here is surely one about closure, isn't it? That for all the points per game is the easier choice. It would always leave us with that question mark. And that even if we do, as you just said, then contrive to blow it again, at least we will know that we didn't deserve it, even if it psychologically breaks us all. It's the right way to do things. Because we are, as you've said many times, Moscow, we're here to watch football. And let's face it, despite the, you know, soul-crushing anxiety attached to it, it's still the best football that most of us have probably ever seen.
And I will say as well, in previous seasons, I would have been fully in favour of just going points per game. Even in seasons when we had nothing to play for, I would have been more in favour of going points per game, because I couldn't be arsed watching Steve Evans play out a season for us, and I couldn't be arsed watching Paul Heckingbottom do it. I would have wanted those seasons to be over. The fact that I don't want this one to be over shows to me that it's good and that it's actually worth something. So let's just try and get through it if we can.
Just to zero in on a couple of the objectors, QPR have mentioned that they're not happy. And they've acted with what sounds like a degree of surprise about this return of football on the 20th of June. And it strikes me as a little bit disingenuous what they've been saying, because they've had meetings. They've had lots of conference calls with the EFL, and they've always known that July the 31st was the cutoff date. So they must have had a ballpark idea of when the game was going to come back in order to fit in 9 matches plus the playoffs. You know, when did they expect it was going to happen?
Yeah, I must admit, I was confused by this. They were like, whoa, we can't that soon, right? Did they assume we were going to play 5 games in a week at some point so they could have a full pre-season in this? You know, at some point, you're going to have to play a lot of games in a not very long period of time. So surely it makes sense to get that going a little bit sooner, like as soon as possible, rather than playing through into September, which was never put through as an option. So, I mean, it's a strange one with QPR, because they're kind of nowhere in the league either. Like, it does seem to be an objection almost out of nowhere, because they're almost certainly not going to get in the playoffs or go down. It just seems odd that they are not prepared for this.
They do have that option. It's the one that Massimo Cellino used to use to threaten and say, right, you guys can restart and we just won't play. And if they're not ready and they're not happy, fine, don't bother. Be all right. I don't think we'll miss them. The away kits are sometimes quite nice, the Dennis the Menace ones. But and, you know, the memory of Roy Vegley scoring at Elland Road and everybody clapping him. But we could just stick that on a video and watch that instead. I'm not bothered about whether QPR play another football match ever again, especially if they're planning to move from Loftus Road, which is a characterful stadium that should be kept, but maybe somebody else can play there.
I mean, and also, Tyner shouldn't be a problem. They've got Jack Clark and his Red Bull reservoir that he keeps at all times, so it'd be fine. You can just start dishing those out to the guys. They'll be absolutely fine.
And what of Charlton as well? Their players, well, several of them might not be available for the running. They've expressed, should we say, reluctance to play for Lee Bowyer. He's been telling TalkSport.
This is more of a Michael Owen at Newcastle situation of not wanting to play, isn't it? Because basically their best player, Lyle Taylor, is out of contract and wants a decent move at the end of this, so doesn't want to get injured playing out some games at the end of the season. Which is a bit ridiculous in a way, because if the season hadn't been curtailed, he would have had to play these games and presumably wouldn't have minded playing them. So I don't know why it's all of a sudden the problem for him now.
Well, I don't know how I feel about this, because, yeah, obviously he was contracted to play for the rest of the season, but nobody was saying that the end of the season was going to be the schedule that QPR are objecting to. There has been a change there that does increase the risk of injury, I think. And looking at his career, he's 30, and yeah, he's only really cracked on. He had 20 games at Sheffield United, but then went on loan to Partick Thistle, then at Scunthorpe, and back to Partick Thistle again on loan. And it's only really the last few years at Wimbledon and then 2 seasons at Charlton that he's done anything. And Bowyer's stance is very different to QPR's and probably quite instructive, where he's basically saying, Lyle Taylor got us promoted last season, played a lot of games this year. I can see it's important to him, crack on, somebody else will have to play, and isn't making a massive deal of it. And I kind of feel like if Lee Bowyer is able to kind of, as his manager, take that attitude, and he said as well that he'd spotted this as a problem from way back as soon as the season got paused. He knows him better than any of us. So I kind of feel like if the manager is willing to let it go, it's not really my place to go in there and tell him off.
I sort of feel as well that like Bowyer's desperate to this season not to be, he doesn't want to give any excuse for them to cancel this season because they're currently in the relegation places. So I think he's like, no, we'll just play. We don't want to, this thing's happening, but it's not a problem. Absolutely fine. We're just going to keep going anyway. I think as well, I think the other thing in his defence is in Taylor's defence is that Charlton are and have been for ages now a complete shit show. So it's a bit like when players wanted out of Leeds, there was always a bit of you thought, yeah, I'd probably want out as well if I had a choice.
Yeah, I would be fuming if he was a Leeds player and Leeds were in that situation where it's the last few games to try and save us from relegation and he's just gone, actually, you know what, nah. But I also, I don't know if this is like trying too hard to be sympathetic or empathetic, but I don't imagine this has been an easy decision for it's different from Charlie Taylor was a 21-year-old and from all the talk from the way he handled it at the time, it sounds like he had absolutely terrible advice from his agents and was just making a mess of things. This is a 30-year-old bloke who's got one final contract ahead of him, which it could even be that this is lined up. And it's also in a climate where those kind of contracts are not going to be available for many players at what he was at a League One level before this season and probably would be returned there with Charlton at the end of this one. There are going to be so many players at that level out of contract, unable to get new clubs and unable to get the wages they were getting before. The equation has changed for a lot of people in that situation. And I think this is less of a kind of, fuck it, I'm chasing the money, than a, oh, fuck, what am I going to do if this doesn't work out?
He's a bastard though, right?
Less of a bastard than Michael Owen. On a par with Charlie Taylor. I'm going to go with that.
You can still take advantage of the 20% key worker discount with our podcast partners, Levi Solicitors. 10% off for everybody else who goes through the Square Ball. They're saying thanks to everybody who's keeping things going for us during COVID lockdown. Legal matters, if you have them on your agenda, get in touch with Levi's. Get on these discounts. Personal law, business law as well. They cover loads and loads of areas. Full information on the website. 10% Square Ball discount, 20% for a key worker. LeviSolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Who's this French child we've been linked with?
Tierno Balde. I'm doing Spanish there, aren't I? Tierno Balde. Don't know if he's any good. He's 17, he's a centre-back. Bound to be good, surely.
Paris Saint-Germain, though.
It makes a change from constantly being linked with cock after that one Victor Orta story where he had a folder full of cock information and now they won't stop talking about...
Cock dossier.
Exactly. I hope his name is Cock. I'm not confusing him with somebody else, am I?
I think it was right.
Yeah, so it's a break from that. It all adds up, you know, PSG owned by QSI, out of contract, centre-back, well, we'll be missing Ben White. If I was going to put together a nonsense headline just to get clicks from Leeds United supporters, this is exactly the story I would have come up with.
Do we know if he's related to Bobo Balde, former Celtic player?
One can hope.
Let's just say he is. He was a centre-back as well, wasn't he? So he's probably learnt it all from his dad, who may not even be his dad. Might just have the same name.
Leeds pull out of cock deal. That's all I've got. I've only got that far so far. I don't know how we incorporate Tierno Balde, but we'll move on anyway. We've also been linked with Adolfo Gaich. Gaich? Who's he?
Is it pronounced Gooch?
God, it will be, won't it?
Adolf Gooch. He sounds great. I really like the video of him on YouTube. Looks amazing. He looks, not to give him too much hype, but I'd say he looks a bit like Harry Kane from watching him play in these clips. Kind of tall, but fairly quick still. Can finish, fairly skillful.
Are we slightly concerned about an Argentinian of,
his heritage,
of German descent,
yes,
whose name is Adolf? I mean,
yeah, I did
wonder. I don't want to make light of this, but there was an escape route for some people after World War II who felt that life in Europe was going to be difficult for them, because they were Nazis, and they went to Argentina. I mean, I don't know if the Gooch family had any involvement in anything they shouldn't, or where Adolf fits in. But he's got quite a stern glare in the picture I've seen here.
Yeah, I suppose it'd be his great-granddad now, wouldn't it? We have to forgive and forget at some point, don't we?
I mean, nothing to indicate that he's got those sympathies whatsoever. I mean, that's a complete fabrication. So
yeah, we're not implying anything about him, just his family.
I mean, what better way to get over all the Kiko Casilla incidents of the season than to sign the son of a war criminal, the grandson of a war criminal?
Anyway, can he play football? That's all that matters, isn't it, in this day and age?
He definitely can. He looks like a real unit. He's sort of Matt Smith proportions almost in terms of his bulk, but then he's skillful as well.
We do know though that if we sign Big Kev, that's it for Bielsa. Two strikers, what more does he need? And then he can play Stuart Dallas if he has to.
And Tyler Roberts, let's not forget.
That was one of the details that came out of Phil did a piece on The Athletic about Jean-Kevin Augustin. And in it, it was a quite a detailed breakdown of his attributes, which we'll come on to shortly. But one of the details that did come out of that was that the club are intending to retain Bamford if we go up. So that's your front two to pick from in the Premier League.
That was a given. I didn't need a report for that. I know that's what Bielsa's doing. I'd take Adolfo as well.
And you keep ignoring Ryan Edmondson.
Well, there is that. Is he back in training, Edmondson? I've not seen him on any of the clips. Or is he injured still?
Not sure, but he's 21 years old then. 20, you say 21. So you would assume that's an under-23 player then rather than a first-team contender.
He's a full Argentina international.
Don't care. He's
Adolfo. I mean, yeah, we won't see him for at least 2 years if he signed for us, because he'd have to do his murder ball sessions and go around that running track a minimum of 10,000 times.
And we also have to assume that somebody at the particular website where we found this story hasn't just trawled Transfermarkt for Argentinian strikers and gone, Bielsa will sign him for Leeds if we make enough noise about it. Oh, look at his YouTube clip. Let's embed that in a story.
I enjoyed watching it anyway.
It's always nice to see a good footballer.
On to Augustin then, and that piece that Phil did in The Athletic with the comparison between him and Bamford. It was interesting to see the stats on what they do in particular. And in short, Bamford's good at launching the press and being crucial for turnovers and link-up play. Not great when it comes to the box, whereas Augustin is a bit more direct, likes to run, but not great at one-on-ones, which is strange for somebody who likes to run with possession. But another interesting line was about a high-octane side like Red Bull Leipzig is not the same as fitting into Bielsa's structure. Leipzig, a couple of years back, they attacked with speed and liked to counter, and their intense press makes Leeds' look mild in comparison. Imagine what that must have looked like, because ours is insane.
I am struggling to imagine how that would look, in fairness, because I think what we do now is up there with anything I've ever seen, including people at a higher level who've done it, people like Liverpool and Man City and Barcelona. I think the amount of miles we seem to put in seems to match that, admittedly, against a much lower quality of opposition.
I mean, you see what we did to Arsenal in the FA Cup in that first half earlier on this season, which feels like a lifetime ago now. I mean, long and short of this Augustin bit is basically we can't wait to see him pick up the ball and run at whichever shithouse has replaced Richard Keogh. That's about the size of it.
Although there was the speculation that Bielsa is going to coach that dribbling out of him because he's not actually that great at it. The thing that struck me from this was that his goal and assist numbers when he was playing in Germany were on a par with Mbappe and Raheem Sterling. And that this is kind of the Victor Rota's argument for finding him and signing him, is that if you can get him back to that level, then he will be as good as Mbappe and Raheem Sterling combined, probably. If you like, stood one of them on top of the other, but he was still ran just as fast like a velociraptor, then that's what you would get.
That's what you've got to aim for, isn't it?
I think so. Is you want all your players to be as good as if you took two of the world's best, put them on each other's shoulders in a dinosaur suit. It's what I took from Phil Hayes' rigorous statistical breakdown of Big Kev's style of play anyway. That and that his hair looks nice. There's a good bit about his hair. He's dyed it white. Looks good.
And we've got Tyler Roberts as well, who can play up towards the top end of the pitch. And we saw the Ask Tyro thing that the club did. And this is always good. This always gives us a nice insight into the players. We saw Bamford the other week. A bit of fun in there. What was your highlight?
My favourite bit was when he said, they asked him what he'd be if he hadn't been a footballer, and he just said he'd have invented something, try and make himself a billionaire, which is hugely optimistic to think that you'd just be able to, if I wasn't doing all the training and stuff, I'd probably just come up with something brilliant. And not to be harsh to Tyler, but I wouldn't necessarily back him to invent anything.
The hubris of a young man, that one, isn't it? It's great.
I'd have probably just done something else massively successful if I hadn't been a footballer.
He has got his own distinctive way of thinking. I like that he's gone for the aesthetic decision of having T. Roberts on the back of his shirt instead of just Roberts. And apparently that is purely because he thinks it looks good and makes him stand out. And I like it. I'm on his side 100% with T. Roberts. I think it looks cool.
I also like the bit where he said his mum was his biggest inspiration and he spoke quite nicely about her. So I think that's nice. I think that's maybe why him and Calvin are so tight together. They just talk about who's got the best mum.
The interesting bit for me was that he was never really a loyal supporter of a football club. He used to support Arsenal and Tottenham. His family supported Liverpool, so he never supported them. But how could you be so fair weather in terms of big clubs?
Welcome to the Premier League in 2020, and wait until you see what Leeds United's new fans are like next season when we're up, when we have loads of kids who were kind of like the modern version of what Michael was complaining about before, people who were Man United fans but never watched them play, but who they do actually watch them play now, but they switch because there's more of it on TV, and so you can just go, oh, well, Arsenal have got a good team this season. I think I'm going to watch them and see if they can win the league. And you have people who they like players. So like Tyler says that his hero is Neymar, and there was a lot of people who, when Neymar moved from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain, binned the Barcelona shirts, got Paris shirts because they like Neymar more than they like a team. And it's kind of, as a old school, grew up in the 90s football fan, it's bewildering. But I think there's a lot more of it about than we maybe give credit for.
I found it hard to accept him saying Neymar as well, because to my mind, Neymar himself is only about 21 years old. So it's impossible that he could have been looked up to by one of our players. I feel like a player for Leeds United should still be saying that they want to be like Gary Lineker or Andy Sinton. Someone, a good solid mid-90s player is what they should be at the very latest.
Very inspired by Billy Wright.
I don't want to go up anymore, now you've put it like that. Sounds like it's a really bad idea.
Well, Rob, Tyler Roberts does. He wants to be at the top of the Premier League in 5 years, so let's do that for him. If he's happy to do that with us, then I'm happy for him to play for us.
I'm prepared to give it a go. I'll say that. I am prepared to give it a go.
And he will. I think I didn't mean to ignore Tyler Roberts' claims for playing up front before. I was just joking that Bielsa will play Stuart Dallas anywhere before he plays the actual player who is supposed to play there. But I think Tyler Roberts will tear things up in the Premier League, as the kids say. And I think he'll be better than Neymar in 5 years. I think he's that good. I'm going to get T. Roberts on the back of my shirt, whichever club he's playing for by then.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
We'll be talking to Phil Hay in the second half of the week in our podcast with The Athletic. That's released on a Friday morning. And we're going to be chatting about the return to action. Now we have that date and plenty more, including what you've decided we should talk about via the poll on Phil's Twitter. There's that big piece that we referred to earlier on Jean-Kevin Augustin and what he's dead good at. That's now live. You can also read about exactly why it is that Leeds don't want to go with points per game. And there's an interview with AD White in the pipeline too. And when you subscribe to The Athletic, you can read everything and listen to all the podcasts without ads. There's no surveys, pop-ups, 10-page galleries, no clickbait, just quality stories you're not going to find anywhere else. And you can still use our 50% off discount, theathletic.co.uk/thesquareball. In this bit of the podcast, we do heroes and villains. First, the Ken Bates Villainy Award for somebody who's made things a bit worse for us over the last 7 days. And the first nomination has to go to somebody called Ken Bates, be it our Chelsea character who invaded our lives for a bit during the 2000s, or one of the other ones, including Councilman Ken in Casper, Wyoming, in District 2 or whatever it's called, Ward 2. I can never remember.
Ward 2, I think he is. Or something like, oh, I can't bloody remember. Anyway, he's ignoring us. I would have been able to check on the Facebook group, but like so many, my freedom of speech, my constitutional rights have been eroded by this complete villain, and I've been booted off his Facebook page. But people are still doing the stalking for us, and we're still keeping a check on, I think it's called Oil City News, is the Wyoming thing, so we can see what he's up to. And at the moment, he's trying to reopen swimming pools.
The bastard.
Which seems, but in typical Bates fashion,
they're full of cyanide.
People want to open it and it to charge them higher to swim. Put the prices up, he's wanting. 20%. stick that on your swimming pool. You want to swim?
That's steep.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen either. Essentially, everyone's come out and said, look, even if you put it up by 20%, people will still die, won't they? So maybe we shouldn't do it because of the old COVID and everything. I don't think a 20% price rise is going to scare off a virus. So why don't we not bother?
There is some exceptional Ken Batesian logic in the middle of this where, yes, they are a danger to health, but that like his proposal is, if the people want it open, let's charge hires to swim. So it's almost like getting every penny out of them you can before they catch the deadly virus as part of the process.
Why don't we sell crack cocaine? What do people want in here?
I mean, it's going to be incredibly harmful to their health, but it's incredibly profitable.
If you want premier pools, you've got to pay premier prices.
It's the American dream, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, someone, a more sensible person, Councilman Bob Hoskins, he's called Hopkins, but I like to call him Bob Hoskins because it's so close. He's tried to be kind, I think, here in dissing Ken's idea, but he said, we would be one of the very few places in the world that would be opening pools.
I don't remember Bob Hoskins talking like that when he used to do the adverts for BT.
We'd be one of the very... It was Cockney, wasn't it?
Very.
One of the very few places in the world it'd be opening pools to the public, he said, before adding he would like to see splash pads opened if possible. I mean, I don't know what that means, but they sound good too.
Sounds like another one of those German underground clubs, doesn't it? Okay. Do we have any other villain candidates then?
Alan Shearer. Although I'm not sure if it's Alan Shearer who's the true villain here, or Ruud Gullit, or Newcastle FC in general. But there was a story last week on...
It's Sunderland, isn't it?
It could be them that's the real villains. But I feel like Alan Shearer should cop the blame for most of this. Anyway, it turns out that when Ruud Gullit was manager at Newcastle and there was all sorts of arguing going on behind the scenes, and Gullit dropped Shearer for a game against Sunderland. And if Newcastle had won, it would have been... That argument would have been settled in favour of Ruud Gullit. And there was a tweet in a follow-up to this story where George Corkin said that Gullit says he thinks he would have stayed. Kieran Dyer says he thinks Alan Shearer would have joined Leeds. And that's the kind of thought experiment that, you know, you'd ignore in most circumstances. But then the actual prospect of Alan Shearer could have joined Leeds in the summer. This was when we'd sold Hasselbank that summer and signed Michael Britches, we'd signed Michael too big for his britches. And then this Sunderland game in question was about a fortnight after we'd signed Darren Huckabee. So it's that era that we're talking about, basically the run to the Champions League when David Wetherill got us there at the end of the season. We weren't helped that year by Alan Shearer scoring 4 goals against us. And after this Sunderland game in question, he scored 8 against us. And I feel like given his entire career, when he scored 22 against us, more than he scored against any other team, and he actually scored more goals than he played games against us in the Premier League era, Shearer, like, we should never forget Alan Shearer's absolute villainy when it comes to playing against Leeds United. But now we have this added scenario where he could have been playing up front for us and scoring all those goals for Leeds United. And I always had this feeling that if we'd kept Hasselbank that season, we might have won the league. What if we'd not signed Darren Huckabee and we'd played up front either Michael Bridges, Harry Kewell, or Alan Smith with Alan Shearer? Because he was quite good at scoring goals, Alan Shearer. I don't know if the younger listeners will be aware of that.
He was really annoyingly good with Shearer. He was one of those players that you just, because it was true, you just knew we would score against you. And he was, I think, probably his... a bit underrated now because a lot of his goals are not the sort of thing that'd get on a compilation in the same way as some of Messi's would, but just absolutely relentlessly scoring, just twatting it in from sort of 10 yards was what he did every single week. He had some good spectacular ones in there as well, but just the sheer relentlessness of his goals and being in the right place at the right time. And his overall play, he was such a bastard as well. He'd have befitted him nicely at Leeds, I think, because he could mix it. Let's just say that
I put this on Instagram years and years ago, but it's the one time Lucas Radebe, absolutely lovely fella, calm, smiley, happy. The only player I can recall seeing him losing it with is Alan Shearer after Shearer smashed him in the face with an elbow. And even then, it's still Radebe is kind of, he gets up after being treated and he's holding his nose and he walks across and he just kind of, he jabs him on the chest saying, you know what you did. He's like, you need to stop doing that. I mean, if it had been Duncan Ferguson, Ferguson would have been dismantling Alan Shearer like a cheap Lego castle, but it's Raderby being mad, so it's still quite mild. But to get Raderby to that stage, you've got to be a prick.
I would have been prepared to give that a go, Shearer to Leeds. That would have been an experiment worth buying into, I think.
Just to see how badly we could Billy Painter him as well. Put him in the best Leeds team of a generation and he doesn't score a single goal.
If there's one club that can do it, we're the club. Other nominations for villains.
Tyler Roberts, in his Q&A, was asked who's the better player between Bale and Pablo, and he said Bale.
Well, he's wrong.
He's wrong, isn't he?
Yeah. It's like the supporting Spurs and Arsenal thing. It's just something he needs better education on.
I'm nominating the Premier League chief executive, Richard Masters, because they've paid their parachute payments to the Football League and they've advanced a bit of the money for next season, which is basically an advance on it's like a loan up front. It doesn't mean it's any extra money. They won't talk about helping the Football League financially until the Premier League's finances are more secure. He says, I think what we've got to get ourselves into is a situation where we're sure of the Premier League's financial situation, a time when clubs in the Premier League are suffering significant revenue losses. We'll do that before we return to the topic of helping anybody in the Football League. And meanwhile, Tottenham Hotspur are paying Harry Kane so much money that as we nominated him for heroism previously, he can pay from his own pockets to keep Leighton Orient afloat. But yeah, Richard Masters' priorities. Now, it's biting hard at Manchester City. Not sure they're going to be around next season. So we can worry about helping Macclesfield maybe next season if they're still around. But I've got to make sure that, you know, Liverpool and Man United get through this. Arsenal, that stadium, there's a lot of empty seats in there. That's a big revenue loss. And the billions that they get in sponsorship are only going to go so far, aren't they? So we'll get round to it later. Meanwhile, every fucking club in the Football League will go to the wall and we won't have to worry about promotion or relegation.
This is what I imagine. This whole Premier League thing is what I imagine trying to get into the VIP area of a Las Vegas nightclub is like. You think you want it and you spend ages trying to get into it. Finally, you get to the velvet rope. They let you in. And when you get in there, you absolutely hate it because it's $300 for a bottle of bloody vodka or whatever. And you sit there being fucking miserable. That's what this reminds me of.
I mean, there are good people there. We've touched on Harry Kane before and we've mentioned as well ad nauseum the whole convoluted fuckover, which is the Premier League unable to conceive of sharing any money with the Football League unless it's absolutely forced, and because they have to pay their players so much money, and then you have their players going, well, why don't I just give some money to Leighton Orient myself? Is that easier? And so the whole circular nightmare of the thing is just ridiculous. But it doesn't help when the people in charge just have this attitude of, well, you know, we'll worry about the Premier League first, because, you know, if Watford get into any financial difficulty, think of the dozens of people who'll give a shit. Sorry, I always pick on Watford. I'm sure Elton John would be very upset. John Barnes would be unhappy too. Graham Taylor died, didn't he? Well, at least he won't be around to see it.
We should also nominate two of our lower level nemeses in this division who we've had a lot of fun at the expense of. Nathan Jones and Lee Johnson. Who wants to go first? First on Jones.
Well, we have to play him again, don't we now? We thought we'd seen the last of him, but he's come back. He's gone crawling back to Luton.
A resurrection.
Sort of, yeah. It's less a resurrection and more a man going back to his wife after he's left them for the secretary, isn't it? He's like, I know it's a bit awkward, but we had a good thing, didn't we? Once, we've got the kids and stuff. Yeah, come back. We'll give it another go. We'll see how it goes. It never works, does it, our second time around? I don't know why he's doing this.
The other one to nominate is Lee Johnson, the distant speck on the horizon who is standing right next to you. He wants crowd noise, which a lot of people seem to want crowd noise. I even saw talk of there was somebody in Spain saying that TV companies might put CGI fans, like a computer game, in the background, which if that's the price of bringing football back, I say let's just close the game down. Too difficult, too complicated, too much of this shit. Let's not bother. But Lee says he would like crowd noise to come into games. And he says he thinks the crowd noise angle is interesting. He'd seen it in South Korea. And it looked like it worked quite well if the timing was good. Now, I don't know if people remember we discussed a couple of weeks ago the football club in South Korea who were famous around the world because they filled their stands up with life-sized sex dolls wearing masks. That's the only footage I've actually seen of crowds from South Korea, and I don't imagine Lee Johnson seeking anything out that I haven't found. So I'm slightly concerned about what sort of noises he is wanting to hear from the stands at Ashton Gate, whether it's, well, I don't want to, nobody needs to hear it, least of all Lee Johnson.
Hey, we got a tweet this week. Somebody tweeted us saying, do you think that the club could investigate piping in fan noise? So basically you're sat here watching it, you know, on your computer or whatever, or you're watching it on Sky, and then you hook your computer up somehow to the club who then pipe it into the ground. Could you see a flaw in that plan when it comes to Leeds fans?
Well, did you see the Danish team? I think it's AGF, who they set up a kind of a Zoom call thing where you could register. You could basically buy a ticket in a virtual zone representing where you would normally sit in the stadium. So there was kind of getting people back together in groups they would normally have. And then they have a certain number of big screens in the stadium, and they were putting these Zoom calls, the grids of people, onto the screens and playing them yelling and shouting and cheering through the speakers to the players. So you had however many people, all the noise piped through, and they would put like sequences one after the other because they couldn't fit them all on, but they'd get people up and they would see the fans. And there were only two people where they had to block their cameras because they were, I use the word gentleman advisedly, exposing themselves. There was no mention of what songs were being sung. I don't know if maybe the average Danish football supporter sings polite songs as they're getting their knob out on camera in front of thousands of people. But I think that sort of thing is open to abuse. That's my view.
But it also sounds quite fun.
Yeah, and given that Sky TV routinely dip the noise of our fans singing Sky TV is fucking shit, can you imagine Sky TV wanting to pipe in our fans through choice?
They'd re-record it. They'll get somebody to record Ilkley Mobile Tat and play that over and say it's us. The Leeds fans in fine voice here. Can you hear the Northerners sing? What a bracing tune.
We should also nominate Bayern Munich because it was the 45th anniversary, you know, of when we won the European Cup, because we are and always will be the champions of Europe. That was last week. They didn't even acknowledge it on their website or socials, did they?
They retweeted one tweet from the UEFA's German account, and that was it. And I say, why go to all the trouble of stealing it from us if they're not even going to flaunt it?
It's almost like they know that it's not really theirs.
It's a significant anniversary as well. The 45th anniversary is not one that that you get every day. It's only 5 years off 50, and you would have thought they would they'd give it a mention. And they do mention stuff. They've been banging on about winning the treble in 2013 or something when I was looking on their website to see if they'd actually said anything about this. There's stuff about that, and there's a big thing they call what's the winger called who played for Chelsea and he's got a bald head and he's one of the most famous players in the world?
Robin.
Yeah, they call him, they go on about him scoring at Wembley. So they've got a big thing about the Mr. Wembley and the goal he scored, but nothing about Franz Beckenbauer cheating his way to winning the European Cup. Well, not winning, because we won it.
They can have this award, I think, can't they? I'm just thinking about who's going to have it. Premier League, we'll get plenty of chances to jibe at them if and when we get there. But I mean, it's an anniversary. It's this week. It's Bayern Munich. Just give us the trophy back. Just do what's right.
I'm happy enough with that.
Yep. Take that star off your shirt and just bin it, because we're not going to sell it on ours. Look weird.
The Andy Hughes Hero Award for this week. Who's your nominations?
Ben White, stroke Brighton. He's sticking around, apparently. It's been confirmed by James Marshman, who was getting the information from Jay Percy, who is Jay Percy Telegraph, who is apparently a reputable person. So we're definitely getting to keep him, which is good, because it was always slightly in the back of my mind that Brighton might decide that they want him back for some reason, just so they can bring him on as their fifth sub.
On that theme, we can give Jean-Kevin Augustin a nomination for being the first to hold his hand up and say that his huge wages can be deferred at Leeds during the coronavirus crisis, which, as we've seen, one of the players we were talking about at Charlton before is a player on loan from Birmingham, who's basically said it's not in his interest to come back and play the rest of the season for Charlton, given whatever he's going on in that situation. Must have been in the back of the mind of a player, in particular like Big Kev, who's barely played a first-team game before all this came, and then is also trapped outside. He's miles away from home. You know, you can't even go out and enjoy the Yorkshire countryside that was probably sold to you as one of the fringe benefits of signing for Leeds United, and you've no idea if this loan move is going to work out, if the season will finish, if there's any way you'll even get to kick a ball for Leeds United, or will you have to sign for them with them going up on points per game. But for him to put the finances in and say, right, yep, I'll take the deferral along with everyone else, and then put the fitness effort in to get him to the point where he looks like he could be absolutely cracking for the remaining 9 games is good.
Some of the stuff when we signed him as well was questioning his attitude slightly as well, but from what he's done so far, you really can't quibble about a single thing of it. He's done more than he has.
There is the question that remains that Phil Hay touches on in the article we're speaking about before, where if this player, when he was at his best, is performing as well as Mbappe and Raheem Sterling, why is he in the Championship signing for Leeds? But everything he's done since he's come here makes him look like a player who can get to whatever level he wants.
And we're all absolutely willing him to become a hero. There's no two ways about that. He's a cult hero in waiting.
We've only got 2 strikers, so we need one of them to be good.
Now, that's not fair, because Patrick Bamford has been using his platform for good this week. And obviously, you know, what's going on in America at the minute is all slightly terrifying. And I'm sure we'll be accused of your virtue signalling. But no, it's pretty horrendous. Don't like to see it. At least Bamford has been brave enough to stick his head above the parapet in this day and age.
And not only that, but following up on it as well. So he tweeted about things going on in America and was told by one person in particular who replied to, no, by no means the other one, basically saying, you know, stick to football, Paddy, and get the politics out of football. And Mr. Bamford, who is not a man of without means, who when he looks out of his window at his land and curses the moles, he could be quite justified in deciding that his life is easy enough and secure enough for him not to worry about what's going on to other people on the other side of the world. But as he pointed out, it is a human rights issue. And that you can talk about, I mean, this is me talking, not Bamford talking, but you can talk about keeping politics out of football, because nobody wants to have their enjoyment of life and games spoiled by hearing about terrible things when they're trying to enjoy sport. But then I don't think that George Floyd was particularly looking to spend the last 8 minutes of his life with a policeman's knee on his neck when he left the house that morning as an innocent man. And for as long as that kind of thing is going on, as much as it is, I think people are well within their rights to keep asking why that continues to happen, even if it is not directly affecting them.
And what people often mean when they say they want to keep politics out of football is, I don't agree with you.
Yeah, it's fine for a football fan to have the opinion, but not a football player. That's the difference.
I don't want you tweeting something I don't agree with, so please stop it, is what it sometimes means.
Patrick is not the only Leeds player to have tweeted about it. Tyler Roberts is tweeted about it as well, and it's probably somebody who is, although he's miles away from the issue as well, it's hard to imagine that he's not looked at the footage of George Floyd being murdered and not thought, well, that guy looks like me, and if I went to America, what's to stop that from happening to me, and why does it keep happening to people who are like me? And as I say, those questions and the anger that's being expressed on the streets of America at the moment, because nobody's given any answers when the questions are asked civilly. I think people have got have reached the end of patience. It's not unreasonable for footballers to share their opinions on their platform about that, because it's important. More important than scoring goals in games of football, I would think, by and large.
Thank God we've got people like Gianni Alioski to lighten the mood a little bit. Just stick him on a motorbike. Hopefully that'll make us all smile a little bit more with the state of the world. Right, then, who's your hero?
Let's give it Big Kev.
Yeah, why not? In all seriousness, this has been a tough couple of months for everyone. So to have done those couple of months pretty much by yourself in a new country when your job is to run around and you're not able to do that must be bloody hard. I'm sure. And I mean, I know he's got the cushion of wealth to go with it and stuff, but even so, it can't have been easy for him. So for him to show enthusiasm and to looking like he's raring to go, good on him.
I would like, if it can be done socially distant, to get our friend, the translator from Chesterfield, back up and do another press conference with Big Kev, and let's hear how it's been for him. I want to hear about, I think we said the other week, we want to hear from Bielsa. It would be nice if Marcelo Bielsa could maybe talk about what it's been like so far away from Argentina and his family as well, but with at least he's kind of had a very long career playing in, I mean, even moving from one part of Argentina to another is a trek. So he's got some miles in the tank and some years of experience to build up to it. But yeah, I'd like to hear from Big Kev, and he'd probably be glad to have somebody to talk to be honest.
Right, well done, Big Kev, then, and we look forward to you banging us in the goals that take us up to the Premier League, which we don't want to be in. That wraps it up then for this week. Check out the Extra Ball Championship Manager podcast. And of course, with Father's Day looming, get on the new merchandise. Those new mugs will be restocked this week with some coasters as well there for you to rest your mug on. Leeds Fighter mugs as well. Don't forget those, the second batch of those with Click et al. On at thesquareball.net. We'll speak to you next week. Thanks for listening. See you in a bit. Bye-bye.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.